satisfy you.
I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And this is Notcast, episode 368. The High Ground DLC.
Yes.
It's time to talk about video games, Fuzz. Aren't you excited?
I have my hookah. I'm fine.
You've got hookah. I've got a full belly from Wendy's, and I felt pretty good.
So when is that Night in the Woods mobile version coming out? Because I will actually buy that.
Yeah, that's coming out, I think, early next year.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I mean, I can double check, but...
Yeah.
I felt pretty good. So I mentioned last week that I have my nails painted, and actually the cashier at Wendy's tonight complimented them. I was like, those are really good. Did you do them? I'm like, yeah. Wow, you're good at that. Like, yes. Aww. I was like, aw, thanks. And the guy seemed pretty straight. He just seemed like, oh, wow, you did a good job on your nails. Like, okay, cool. That's nice. It's always nice to get a compliment from random people.
Nice. Guy on the elevator was like, hey, so what's your hoodie? What's that for? And I'm wearing my TFF hoodie to your Laura was the guest of honor. And it was the Nights on the Bayou. Which I think was kind of a Day of the Dead thing, is how I described it.
Yeah. And it has the bunny and then the cool logo on the back. I get a lot of compliments every time I wear that hoodie. I wore it to do some bank bullshit with Akon dudes, and they were like, oh, wow, where'd you get that? And I told him, like, oh, could I get one? I'm like, no, that was years ago. No, you can't have this.
It was year ago, wasn't it? Was it 2016 or 2015?
I think it was 2015.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Man, I can't remember what themes we've got. I'm working the con, but theme? I'm in the video game cave.
Like, and I've been to so many cons that just all roll into one after a while. I was like, remember that time when, I'll be saying to a friend, where we talked about this or that? What con was that? Well... it could have been this, because I was there, but so-and-so wasn't. No, that was probably this one.
Yeah, the thing of being old and going to too many cons. Too many cons. I have that moment, too, because it's like, oh, yeah. I have people come up to me and they're like, oh, hey, dude, how's it going? And I'm like, hi. Oh, we met at convention. We did. Oh, of course. Hey, good to see you again, you know? I've had people that... like, show up and help at conventions and, like, help me.
Yeah.
I can't even remember their name, but I'm like, oh, it's you. I don't know your name because I have the memory of a goldfish. I can remember your face. I can remember how to get places by fucking landmarks, but gotta help you if you want street names, you know?
I knew a guy back in Florida that was like that with everybody, and I found out later that he never wanted to admit that he didn't remember people's names, but he just said, hey, you! And
how's
just
it going?
Greeted everybody like that.
What's good, buddy? And he's like, I don't know. I don't know what is good. I'm not good. So, it has been another week. We're still here. Shiva is dealing with some convention nonsense and could not join us. Next week is Thanksgiving, so there won't be a show.
No. And well, there could be.
There could be, yeah. We could come over here and just be like, all right, it's Thanksgiving. Everybody join in. We're going to have a party at your place, right?
We are going to do Thanksgiving at our house this year.
Nice.
Because, as you know, Tieran's parents moved out back to their hometown last year and sold the house. They have retired. I'm, like, jealous of them sometimes. I mean, they're doing a very stereotypical retirement life with their huge RV, and they drive around and they go to all the national parks and stuff.
Hey, they've got the money to do it. That sounds great.
I wouldn't necessarily do that, but I am sort of jealous that, like, and Tieran's dad still works a little bit, but only because he wants to. He was, like, the guy that knew all the shit in his particular area. So his company will bring him in as a contractor occasionally. And, you know, he's told them, if you want me to come out of retirement, you better make it worth my while. So I'm pretty sure he's being paid more by the hour as a contractor than when he actually worked there. And I'm sure he was paid pretty well anyway. So, yeah, they're doing all right.
Hey, that's good to find out. I mean... shit, they're retired and off enjoying that. And
yep.
I'm like, my parents probably haven't died yet, so that's good.
Yeah, and his parents are both in their early 60s, so, you know, hopefully they'll continue rolling along. for many years to come. Yeah, the reason why I went off on that tangent is, well, because they're not there, we always used to go to their house for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So, and Tyrion's parents always opened the door to any of Tyrion's friends that wanted to join us. And also had my sister over, you know, for Thanksgiving a couple of years. Like, really welcomed her into the family, too, which was nice. But since they're no longer in town, we're going to do Thanksgiving here. We'll probably have, you know, like, I guess probably Fetch and the rest of Tyrion's gaming group. And I don't know who all will be available, come to think of it.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, you'd be invited, of course, but I know you're doing, you already do, like, three Thanksgiving dinners, right?
You never know. I'll just show up and be like, it's time for fourth meal, bitches, and then, like, eat a turkey, a piece of turkey, and just explode.
Yeah. You're welcome to do that. Come over, eat a piece of turkey, hang out. I mean, I think pretty much everyone that will be over will be people that you know.
Yeah.
Buck is coming over. He's going to cook and stuff like that. So.
Cool. Thanksgiving, it's one of those things where I realized I looked today and then I looked at the calendar and I'm like, Jesus, fuck, Thanksgiving is next week? What the hell? You know, it's we've had this
that time. Hasn't sunk in yet. I just realized that. Next week is a 3-day work week then.
Yep. And
wow,
then
yeah,
a little more than a month out from Christmas. And here we are sitting on the patio and it's 70 degrees.
We're not even thinking of Christmas yet because a week after less than a week after Thanksgiving is MFF.
Yeah. You're thinking in terms of cons.
I'm thinking we have a nice Thanksgiving, and then Tyr drives to Chicago probably Wednesday after work. I guess he'll probably drive on Wednesday and Thursday, set up, and then on Thursday, and then do the con. It'll be really neat to see how that goes. It's like I mentioned before, they're in the convention center.
Uh-huh.
And I just got an email today from the dealer head that I forwarded to Tyrion, because I'm not going to be there, Tyrion will, saying that they've made arrangements so you can drive your car right into the convention center.
Oh, that's rad.
You can do it at Anthrocon, too, if you're one of the people that has a much larger setup, like if you're going to set up a big-ass booth.
Like, say, Suffwolf?
Probably to let Soapwolf do that, yeah, because they've got all these racks and shelves and stuff, and they set up that big ass island.
And the thing is, with
that's
them,
nice.
Is if they have that shit on rolling racks and they have a trailer, they just roll that shit in, just zoop, there we go. That'd be smart as hell if they did. Here's a pro tip.
So earlier you made the joke on the song "Too Many Cooks."
Yeah,
and that reminded me. Our problem this year is literally too many books.
Oh, no.
Because this is always a one-car convention, because I don't go. So Tyrion just takes his car, everyone else is flying, and we have too many books. So we're actually shipping some stuff to Siani's house, because Siani and his boyfriend live in Minnesota.
Minnesota, eh?
And they're driving, and they have like a whole empty back seat. And I'm like, not anymore, you don't.
Nice. It's like, hey, you're part of the For Planet clan of dudes, so guess what? You have been put into the role.
He did offer. I didn't draft his boyfriend's backseat. He did offer. His
boyfriend's backseat. Sounds like
oh my god, that sounded awful.
Oh no, you could be like, oh, it's like a gay racing book. Drafting the boyfriend's backseat.
Yeah.
A tingler. Pounded in the butt by my own butt and my car. Yeah.
Oh my god.
There
should be like a furry version of Tingle who writes stuff like pounded in the butt by my fursuit, which is actually sort of realistic. If someone's else is wearing the fursuit, you could do that.
You could literally go fuck your other self.
I guess it would be pounded in the butt by my fursuit's butt.
Yeah. You know, but speaking of that, though, man, the amount of horny motherfuckers that I see on Twitter going to MFF, Jesus Christ. Like, it just seems like everybody I know that's going to MFF is like, oh, I'm gonna suck so many dicks. And I'm like, really? Okay, guys, look, all right, if you're gonna suck a bunch of dicks, just be safe, please. Make sure you're tested and clean, and if you're fucking people, wear a condom, okay? Don't make...
If you're sucking dicks, remember it's winter in Chicago. Be safe. Use lip balm. You don't want to get all chapped and cracked.
Yes.
Which would also increase your susceptibility to disease catching.
It's like, I was like, oh, you're being facetious. No, actually, that could make sense, too.
Yeah. In fact, just put flavored lube all over your lips and then go...
Yeah. Get the candy cane striped condoms and be like...
Oh, it's so festive.
Yep. Get the holly...
A fuck you for the holidays.
Put the mistletoe on the cock ring. Yeah. Furries, you can do it. But
yeah.
Seriously,
I mean, if you want rimmed, you know, you lay on your back, you put mistletoe around your balls, and it's like, you know where to put your mouth.
If that's your thing. So, we're actually sitting out here on the porch, and I noticed that your neighbor has turned off their Christmas lights.
Really?
So, you've got this neighbor that goes super ham on their Halloween decorations. They had...
Yeah, over in the cul-de-sac over there. Yeah.
And they got... They had all these tombstones and shit for Halloween, and I'm looking over there. Like, last week we were over here, and I noticed they've turned all their Christmas lights on, and they just went again.
Yeah. And I saw that this morning when I was leaving for work. I guess maybe they haven't turned them on for the evening or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's 8:25, so they're probably on a timer.
It is really nice out here, though.
Oh, yeah, it is. And
I enjoy my patio occasionally, you know?
Yeah, getting... Did you put this down, the concrete here?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and you made it. So
and then
it's
textured. It was after we did that. I realized, like, wow, this patio is actually a little bit bigger than it looked originally. Because originally
there was a bush.
There was a big crepe myrtle in the middle that had grown way too tall, and like it was poking up through the trellis there.
Yeah,
and it was all the rest of it was ground covering, and it had those little round stepping stones in it, but you couldn't see it because the people we bought the house from had just. The ground covering had let it grow so much that it completely covered the little stones. So you couldn't see them to walk from the door to the yard or anything like that. And we were like, you know the crepe myrtle there, if it was the right height, if it was about that high, it'd be really pretty. Because this patio is bounded by three windows. And then you'd have this really pretty view from three rooms in the house. But... our view was basically the trunk and some of the flowering because the damn tree had grown. So
yeah, it was probably planted when the house was built.
Probably. And, you know, so we cut down that crepe myrtle and we cut down the one where the big back patio is. And we've still got like 12 crepe myrtles.
Oh, yeah. You have more crepe myrtles than you know what to do with.
And... like, we don't think we have a big yard. And then you're like, you know, there are 12 crepe myrtles in our yard.
Yep. Living the millennial dream, having a house.
Ajax didn't know what type they were, because I guess maybe they don't have this type of tree where he was from. He's like, oh, that's what they're called. I've just been calling them yard trees, because every house around here has a bunch of crepe myrtles in their yards. And I'm like, yard trees, okay.
Well, it makes sense. So, I have to say that... So going back to the title of this episode, the DLC thing. So
yes.
Star Wars, man. Star Wars Battlefront 2. So the last game was disappointing.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
Is that made by the same people that did Old Republic?
No.
Okay. I only ask because I know Old Republic is based in Austin, and I have a friend that works for them.
Yeah.
And he worked on Old Republic.
I think EA owns the... It's the same publisher, but not the same studio.
That was... Was it BioWare, I think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It was BioWare, which is owned by EA, and they're in Austin. Well, BioWare Austin, and then this one was made by DICE.
Yeah, because BioWare also has an office in Canada.
Yeah.
Which is where the lady that Haven always invites down for HavenCon, she works for BioWare, but she comes down from the Canadian
office.
Cool.
But in any event, so that was EA DICE. And it's one of those things where the game looks really pretty, and it's Star Wars. It's a Battlefield game based on Star Wars. The most heinous-ass DLC forced pay-to-win bullshit that has been seen yet. Like, the game itself is $60, right? Which is about the ceiling of most people be willing to pay as a, for a quote, new game. Which has actually kind of gone down over time, if you think about it.
Because I remember SNES games sometimes being as high as 80 or 85 back in the 90s.
And that's because they had special chipsets for the cartridges.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff, there was like the baseline hardware, but you could do lots of cool shit with the other stuff. Like the Super FX chip was a mini 3D processor that they stuck on the board. Which is
why the manufacturing of those cartridges was probably more expensive.
Yeah, and now everything's on disk, but now that things are on disk and they're tied to the hardware of the console, they can only do so much. But
or in the case of the Switch, they're on an SD card.
Yes.
That's so crazy.
The game itself, there's been lots of people talking about how the crate system's really bad, and that you can literally just pump $100 in and be pretty much guaranteed to be way more powerful than somebody who just plays normally.
Mm.
Because the things that you unlock with the cards, they're power-ups, right? And they come in four grades, so there's the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and Tier 4. And somebody with a Tier 4 health increase or whatever will 100% be able to take way more shots than somebody fresh out.
So it's a $60 game, Tier 1, and then you can pay to get up to the other tiers?
No. So okay. There's loot crates. Loot crates are the big problem. So $60 is the base edition, and then there's like some other bullshit editions that are like more expensive that come with like extra crates and nonsense.
Right. Kind of like how WoW has the collector's edition that has a specific pet that only comes in that edition.
Yeah, but not nearly as cool.
Okay.
So basically the game had these crates and you could spend money on crystals and the crystals you could use those to buy crates. And they basically determined that someone actually did the math for this, that to unlock everything in the game, to get everything, you would need probably around like 4,000 hours, or you could just spend $2,100 to get everything to the back's level. Because they kind of accounted for, it's like, yes, you can get legendary drops, the tier 4 upgrade cards, or you can upgrade them over time with parts or whatever.
You're not boring me, I'm just drifting.
But it's one of those things where it literally is, you can pay more money and get, and basically kick other dudes' asses. Mm-hmm. And I actually saw this. I saw this in a stream at launch day, that there was this streamer who had a few thousand viewers that people were throwing money his way, and he was just buying crates.
Well, yeah, if you're a streamer, I mean, I guess that's part of, that's a business expense, right?
Yeah, and people were donating money so that people would buy more crates to own the noobs.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was going around just massacring these day one players because he'd basically been handed a bunch of money to spend on crates.
So I kind of enjoyed playing the games occasionally back in the Nintendo and Super Nintendo era. But, I mean, back then, it was all offline, and you could play with, like, another person who was in your home holding the other controller or something like that. And they didn't have more shit than you did, basically. Yeah, it was all on the cartridge.
This is what you got. Now play it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't think I'd really enjoy video games like this now, where, like, you're fighting against other players online. It's not so much a solo pursuit. A solo entertainment, you know?
Yeah.
And other people can be better than you just by throwing money into it.
And that's not the case in a lot of games. I mean, a lot of EA games are really bad with this.
Yeah.
But this is just the most awful thing yet.
Hmm.
And they actually, as of this recording, have actually said, actually, no, we're taking out the microtransactions. You can't spend money on the crystals anymore. You have to get credits. And so they're, like, live tweaking it in the week of release. But I can guarantee that there's some high rollers that totally laid down hundreds of bucks just so they can own the noobs. And I was listening to a interview with, this thing's Rami Ismail. He was on the Waypoint Radio here a couple weeks ago. And he was like, yeah, when I worked at EA, we totally had dudes that spent $15,000 on loot boxes in Mass Effect 3's multiplayer mode just because they could. And it's like, holy shit, what? Why? And yeah, I was like, okay, cool. It makes money for the publisher, but the people that busted their asses and, you know, worked at the studio and then got laid off because that's how it kind of goes, they don't see any of this. It's not like, oh, they can give residuals to the company. That's not how it works. It's all just money going into the pockets of EA's board and investors, while the people that actually make the game are the ones getting the death threats.
Yeah.
So it's a really shitty situation, and I would advise people, don't buy into that shit. Like, at least in, okay, so I play Warframe, right? It's free to play. and you can totally get everything in the game through just playing the game. It involves a lot of farming, and some of the stuff is real esoteric on how to get it, but you can totally get pretty much everything in the game by playing the game without having to put money into it. Now, I've played several hundred hours of it, and I enjoy it a lot, and I play it with Tesser. It's replaced WoW as our game of choice together. Like, I've put $100 into the game, and I've gotten, you know, basically some cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
You can outright purchase the character classes, the suits, the warframes. You can purchase weapons, but that doesn't necessarily, that doesn't translate you can into directly kicking the ass of your opponent, right? It's not necessarily a PvP game. And when in PvP mode, it has an entirely separate set of progressions. Like, there are mods that are only for PvP. And so you can't just be like, ah, I've thrown $1 million into the game, I will now proceed to own everybody, when that's not really possible. So, video games, man, they're not always a mistake. There are some companies out there doing bad faith nonsense.
Yeah. You want?
Yeah, pass me the hookah fuzz.
Yeah, I figured I'd let you talk for a bit.
What do you got? Tell me about books.
Okay, sure. Well, we've put our newest Argyle book up on Amazon for pre-order. This is the newest Ursula Vernon book. She's writing under her adult fiction name of T. Kingfisher. Clockwork Boys, yes. This is part one of a two-part series. The second part, The Wonder Engine, is going to come out spring 2018. So we're doing the hardcover and the ebook at the same time. And when the second part comes out, we'll do a soft cover, a trade paperback version of this one.
My dad would probably like it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, now that I think about it.
Cool.
He likes steampunk fiction.
Yeah, and it's also, it's very D&D fiction, like, not specifically like D&D the book or anything like that, but it's sort of like, she said that like a lot of people that are, if you're into D&D and you know about having a raiding party and having like a paladin and a wizard and a spy and all that stuff, here, I took it down to one call, it'd be a little less harsh. That you would enjoy it, but it's also funny and heartwarming and exciting, and like, it's got all these different elements to it, and it's going to be really cool. It is really cool, and she did a really great job on the cover, and so she did a front and back cover design for us, and because it's a hardcover, it's a much different layout. Like hardcovers have those flaps on the side that fold over the hardcover part and everything. So, and a lot of times we'll just do like a solid cover for the flap because it folds over anyway and you're not going to see it. But Buck did the layout for this one, and he really went the extra mile on the cover and did this like just really cool. Like, he took elements from her front cover design and worked it into the flaps, and so as a whole the cover just looks really nice. Got her author picture on there and her bio and all that stuff, and it just cool. It just looks really freaking sweet.
So when's that coming out?
Tuesday.
Oh.
21st. Yeah. Great. She wanted it out before the end of the month, because of all the people buying books the holiday shopping season. So I was like, okay, we should definitely get it up on Amazon before Thanksgiving, because Black Friday, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's on there now. It was a pre-order. You can go ahead and order it, and we'll be shipping them off to Amazon. But it's all gone through my printer and everything like that. Everything looks good. I'm spending some money on Facebook advertising. I'll look at advertising it elsewhere. She's also friends with, like, a bunch of other writers, and she's had some other well-known writers, like, write blurbs for it, nice. You know, talking about the book, and we put that on the back cover. So that's really nice. That goes a long way. People are like, hey, if you liked this person, you'll probably enjoy this book or whatever, you know? So that's like my big thing on that side of the house. On the furry side of the house, we're bringing out Camouflage by Kyle Gold at MFF. And this is a book that he first started writing, I want to say in like 2015 or something. It's at least 2 or 3 years old. And he just had it, and it had been like a Patreon novel. Like, he'd posted it a chapter at a time to his Patreon. Oh, cool. Yeah, and then once it was all done, Zubin went back and did more editing on it, did, you know, clean up pass and smoothed it out and stuff like that. And so it's really solid now. It's got a great cover and 6 interiors by Rukus.
Nice.
So really nice artwork also. I think that'll definitely be worth picking up. It's about a white tiger who is going to college in France, and he's being bullied because his cousin is Dev Minsky from the Out of Position books, and like he's only known met his cousin like once or twice, like a big family reunion type thing. He doesn't know him that well, but as you know, for the end of Out of Position, I mean, Dev comes out.
Yep.
So now people are like, there's a couple bullies on the college campus that are like, hey, are you a fag? You want to suck my dick? You know, and he is gay, but he's closeted. He's still sort of in that time where he's kind of dealing with it, coming to grips with his own sexuality as a young man, which we've all gone through, those of us in the spectrum, LGBT spectrum. He's freaking out, and he's down by the river, and he drops his phone. He's like, oh fuck. So he's like, I can't afford to get another one. So he strips down to his boxers and he dives into the river and to try and like get his phone, and it's getting further and further away from him, and he starts kind of drowning, and then somebody pulls him out, and all of a sudden he's 400 years ago. He's in the same town, in the same river, but in like medieval era. Cool. And the church at the time venerates white tigers. He's a white tiger, and white animals are seen as godly if you're white furred. So he's white furred, so he could do well by the church to kind of protect himself, but he's also gay, which makes him like an untouchable.
Yeah.
Basically. And he has 2 friends that are helping him, and they're like the gay underground, you know? And he, you know, he has issues there and is also adapting to dealing with his new circumstances. And I mean, and I won't spoil the ending or anything, obviously, but a bunch of shit happens. It's a pretty dark book, but it's really good. And what's really cool is that Kyle will, like, try something different with, like, every book he writes, you know, and he'll experiment with different stories and things. And so this is a really good one. So I'm looking forward to that coming out. I need to get it up on Fur Planet so people can start pre-ordering it. So after the con, we can, you know, we can ship those orders out.
But that sounds fun.
Yeah. It's a good one. Oh God. Of course, I've got to start setting up and advertising Black Friday sales and discounts and stuff like that. I'm sure we'll do a big Black Friday to Cyber Monday deal like we've done previously.
Buy his books.
Please do. Although what's interesting, and this doesn't really affect us as much because we're primarily an online retailer except for at conventions, but I was reading an article that traditional retailers are starting to get really worried because the enthusiasm for Black Friday among shoppers is decreasing. Like, there's so many more people that are, like, they're not really interested in going out and fighting the crowds. And I mean, there's still going to be crowds, but, like, it's not as big a thing as it was. And, you know, I kind of wonder if retailers overplayed their hand a little bit by pushing into Thursday and there was into Thanksgiving, and there was a lot of backlash about that, and now some retailers are just not doing that at all. So it's kind of the changing face of retail, like, apparently, Amazon and Walmart are really eating their lunch. Sears said in an earnings call that Sears and Kmart are the same company. as they bought them back in the day. And they're like, yeah, we might not be a going concern for much longer. And it's like, just shit.
Such a nightmare if you want to try to go to anything Black Friday. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Companies have been basically outed as getting, like, shitty versions of products to fill the shelves that are almost, like, Black Friday exclusives. I mean, you have to look into this, but they're, like, you know, oh, this model of TV only is really sold one time of year because it has a couple of less features than the TV they sell full price rest of the year. And then, oh, well, you know, it broke down. Well, we don't have the same model, so we can't refund you. Sorry, pal. No replacement.
It'll be like the Szechuan sauce thing. You know, they'll advertise as having it, but like, we've got this amazing TV, $500 for a 62-inch LCD or something like that. They'll have four or maybe two on hand in the store, and people will be banging down the doors trying to get them.
It's super unpleasant for all the unfortunate workers as well, having done that at Toys R Us.
I was going to say, we can both speak to that. We've both done retail.
Toys R Us and Kohl's.
Yeah.
So Kohl's was less crazy.
I did Montgomery Ward. I imagine Toys R Us was absolutely insane.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I think it's like, oh, it's Christmas time. You know, I kind of didn't mind working Toys R Us, and then I realized that this time of year is such a hellscape.
And yeah.
The temp people, the holiday employees, they treat them like shit. And I'm like, never mind. See, there's these good memories of helping parents find cool toys, and the bad memories of the parents mad because the cool toy their kid wants is no longer in stock because they were too slow.
Did you work there during the Tickle Me Elmo kind of phase?
I was there for Furbies, and
I remember those.
There was a couple of Elmos. I was there for the launch of the Xbox 360 in 2006, so I worked there from, like, 06 to 09 or whatever. So, yeah, I was there through a lot of those crazes, and it was not fun, just to say.
I know that my store dealt with the Furby issue because Ward's had an electronics department, and they had a small amount of video games and Furbies and various bullshit, electronic toys. Yeah. So they had rushes on the Furbies as well. My last few years there, I worked in the jewelry department, and the last couple years, we had to, the opening crew, which I was on, we had to get there at 4 a.m. to open the store at 5.
Yeah.
And it's like, normally, our store opened at 10.
Uh-huh.
And it was just absolutely ridiculous to be there at 4 in the morning, open at 5, and there actually be people there.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like, and now that it's pushed into Thursday, people are like, yo, that's really fucky.
And I'm sure people are like, oh, fucking Gen X are having to get up at 4 a.m. Because I know millennial era retail employees, they're like opening way earlier, or they're dragging people in on Thanksgiving Day to do it.
Yeah, or like, oh, we open at midnight on, you know, on Friday.
There,
like,
was some fucking place opening at 7 o'clock on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them doing that.
Yeah.
And people have really pushed back on it because it's shitty.
Yeah. And they're like, you're off during the day, eat dinner with your family in the afternoon, and then come in at 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
On Thanksgiving.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
How about no?
Yeah, it's like, sorry, mom, dad, extended family that's in town for the holiday, I gotta go sling video games at Walmart at 7 o'clock.
94-year-old grandma, who this may be her last Thanksgiving, gotta go to work, feed the capitalist machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I'm like, okay, Black Friday, it's a thing. People can do that. Retailers gotta do that. But I think they should boycott Thursday sales, absolutely. Like, let people that are only paid $8-$10 an hour to deal with your horse shit have fucking Thanksgiving Day with their families. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. Well, there was a thing I tweeted probably a couple of weeks ago at this point. It was like, because of the holidays, such and such company believes that our hours are different on these holidays. And it's implying that they're like, oh, people can spend the holiday with their family somewhere. It's like, nope, open 24 hours, open 24 hours, open 24 hours. On, like,
God.
Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Thanksgiving, New Year's Day. It's like, you fuckers. Yeah, that's bad. I know this shouldn't be, this is not a controversial statement, but when you're dealing with retail employees, do your best to be nice to them. They're putting up with a lot of shit.
And they're people, too. I think a lot of... I mean, I think people forget that. You're dealing with someone working fast food or retail, any kind of service position. You're dealing with people as well. You know, they don't want to be there any more than you do at 6 o'clock in the morning in a screaming crowd. I mean...
Oh, yeah. Don't be the day-drinking wine mom with her bob haircut who wants to speak to your manager. Don't do that, kids. Don't do that at all.
Yeah, don't do that.
I mean, I do think a lot of folks, I hope, like, I would hope that the people listening to this show and our general demographic would have that experience and hopefully have the compassion to be like, I worked this once. It fucking sucked. Now that I'm not working this, I should remember where I came from and not be assholes to the poor wage slave.
Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of the let me talk to your manager types, like they've forgotten, they've either forgotten that, or they're like, well, I had to suffer through it, now you have to suffer through it. And it's like, passing on shit to the future generations is really not how you should look at this. Like, I had this terrible experience, let me share it with you, you know? Yeah. That's not cool, man.
It's like, try to be nice to the people that you deal with, especially when, like... Well, like, okay, for example, I had a thing today where I got two text messages from U-Haul saying, oh, by the way, your dude touched the fucking tollway, you owe us $8.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, what? Really? And I, like, pinged the guy, and I'm like, what did you do? It's like, I looked at the wrong sign, and it was just fucky-ass U-Haul bullshit about... Oh, you were on the tollway, therefore it's like a dollar extra per toll, plus you gotta pay the toll, plus blah, and it's like, ugh, Christ, really?
Mm.
But I walked in, and I'm like, hey, so I got this, and they're like, I gotta use the website. It's like, can't do anything else? You can't do it here? Like, nope, gotta go to the website. I'm like, wow, that's really not helpful to the consumer. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, it's not your fault. You know, it's like, that sucks, but it's not your fault.
You weren't like, I want to talk to your manager. I'm an important convention business person. Business phone.
Oh, God. I actually had a phone call today where I was talking to... My AV guys lost some shit, so I owe the AV company, like, another $200-something dollars. Oh, so shit. I'm kind of cross with my crew on that. But he was like, oh, you know, don't... You know, on something else, that they had some lights fail or something, and... They were like, oh, don't worry, we'll make it up to you for next year's event. And I'm like, nah. I didn't tell them that, no, there will not be more horse bullshit. But dealing with that company has been nice, so yeah. I'm not going to, like, burn that bridge or anything.
Yeah, and you never know if Fiesta ends up having to tap that company.
Yeah, I don't even know who Fiesta rents from anymore, because I know we rent just stupid amounts of bullshit, and... The AV...
Well, the con also owns a lot of stupid amounts of bullshit, too.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I know. The con over the years gradually tries to buy shit and add to the overall inventory so that you don't have to rent every year.
Uh-huh.
Because it'll save money in the long time, but...
Yeah, as long as we
as the con grows, AV becomes a bigger and bigger operation, so...
That's like why we always borrowed Akon's bullshit. That saved us a lot of money. And we didn't ever really buy anything because where would we store it?
Yeah. And you also always kind of knew that the con was going to have a limited lifespan.
Yeah.
I mean, you never intended for it to run forever like a furry con.
Yeah. Which, speaking...
I mean, if you did, that'd be different. There's a reason for Fiesta to stockpile shit because...
Yeah, and like, Akon's been running it for 28 years or so, so they've got accumulated bullshit from decades of... running events. And like, yeah, speaking of, like, this is the last weekend of EQLA in Anaheim.
Sure, it's their last year too, isn't it?
Yep. They've seen the writing on the wall, which is not surprising, honestly. It's just one of those things. It's like, yeah, I mean, we broke even this year and made a little bit, teeny tiny bit of money, about the same as we did last year, which is to say, fuck all.
Right.
But we shrunk. I think I've said this before, we shrunk a bit, and while I'm still very, very proud of our work and the amount of money we raised for charity...
And the ridiculous amount of money you raised for charity, yeah.
It's also just like, yeah, the writing's on the wall for that scene. Like, you can't really run a convention in that style. And actually, you can't really run conventions in the style of, like, Wizard World anymore. This actually, I'm segueing into another section here.
Oh, yeah,
Did you see that thing today where Wizard World's like, we're not sure we can continue operating past next year?
No shit. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was somebody...
They're a big operation, too.
They've got a shitload of events, and
they do those massive line cons, 11 billion guests.
And they had an operational loss of more than $5 million last year.
Fuck.
Yeah. They run a million fucking events like this, but the thing is, the market is so saturated that they're just eating each other's lunch constantly.
Yeah, because Wizard World isn't the same org that does, like, Fan Days, Dallas Comic Con, and, like, there's, like, two or three big cons here in Dallas that aren't even the same company.
Yeah.
They're, like, different things.
You know,
We had a Wizard World here once many years ago.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know if it didn't pan out or if they pulled out because other companies were stepping up or what, but...
It's... That whole market is super fucked.
Yeah.
Because, there's three major ones that are mentioned in this article, and all of them... There's Wizard World, and then the two others. Then both the two others were people that had split off from Wizard World, going "fuck you, I'll make my own."
Right.
And so you have these multi-million-dollar events.
Yeah.
Like ACON is a multi-million-dollar event, but not even on the scale of bringing in all these fucking actors and voice actors and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like getting VAs and stuff to come to small conventions like Nightmare Nights and the PonyCons is not super expensive because they tailor their prices to the market, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, we paid a few thousand for this person and, $1,000 for that person. We pay their room and flight and show them a good time. But these major mega conventions, they're fucking death marches for the actors and VAs and people that they bring in.
Yeah.
Like, they're always on stage. They're always signing stuff. The reason the prices for autographs are so high is that the con's taking a cut of it and stuff like that. And so,
and if they're not on stage or doing photographs, they're at their table signing.
Yeah. So it was cool when we got to go do that meet and greet and get the photo with John DeLancey and Sir Patrick Stewart. But we also know what kind of con we were dealing with. It was like photo, shake hand, move on. Photo, shake hand, move on.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you look at these things and what churning fucking massive fuck piles of money involved.
I gotta totally shout out to the actors, so many actors I've met, and Patrick Stewart does very few cons. He lives between New York and Britain. That was like one of the first times I'd really seen him be advertised as being at a con when you and I saw him, and he actually looked at me like I was a human being and smiled.
Yeah.
And that meant the world to me. Not like I could have, even a brief conversation during a photo op, because it's like, click, go, I got a sense that it's so weird. I got a sense that he was a nice guy from this, 3-second interaction, you know? But, I felt that he was, he was trying to be present for the people that really wanted to meet him. Rather, even though I know that it was probably a slog, and he probably was in his late 60s or 70 by that point.
But yeah, the article was on Newsarama or whatever. Let me pull it up, because I was, I know that this game is super fucking crazy. Conventions, there's so much money involved. We had that Rockin' Nerd Year Eve.
Yeah.
That was downtown that
I went to that,
massively in the hole.
Yeah, I know. And that's I was just walking right up and getting the pictures with the people that I wanted and stuff like that. And I got, I think I did, two or three photo ops. And, I went on Friday for a couple of them because I worked next door. And I figured I would have to wait that long. But even I was surprised at how few people were there, because it sounds like a neat idea, but then you're like, dude, people go to New Year's Eve parties. They don't go to a con and do that.
So the article's on Newsarama. It says Wizard World warns of substantial doubt of it continuing into 2019.
Mm.
And basically, Wizard World Inc.'s Q3 2017 quarterly report has been released with a notice that due to recent operations loss, there is, quote, substantial doubt, unquote, that the company can continue its operating as it is now past November 2018. The company had a loss from operations of $4,454,857 and $1,182,246 for the 9 months ended September 30, 2017, and the year ended December 31st, 2016, respectively. Yeah. And so in 2017, or in the year of 2016, they lost $4 million, and then in 2017 lost a further $1.18 million running conventions. Like, what the fuck, man?
And these are not cheap experiences to go to, so it's not like they're not charging attendees enough. It's just, I guess, all the overhead. But yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Like, for us, you know, with Nightmare Nights, our entire operation, our entire convention's operations was just a hair over 60 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you look at some of these bigger cons, and that's less than an appearance fee from some of these people.
Yeah.
Appearance fee plus guarantee, you know.
And you consider for the anime cons... Like, I know at least Akon bring a lot of manga artists, the original manga artists from Japan. They'll bring the original Japanese voice actors over from Japan. I mean, I'm sure to bring the American voice actors from the dubs as well. But you're talking about a not insignificant number of people flying them over from Japan. And that's a lot of flights at a lot of expense, and I'm sure it is not cheap to fly to Japan and
back. Oh, yeah, and you have to go out there and negotiate with the companies to get them to let them bring their people over.
Yeah.
Like, you don't bring over voice actors and show staff from these companies unless you get, like, their explicit permission from the companies above them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother mess. So basically, what you can take from this conversation that is, if you want to run a convention, you're insane. So good luck with that.
Yeah, and even just starting a small furry convention, I think people underestimate how much work, money, and commitment it takes to do that.
Well, moving on to the furry convention things, apparently the Anthro Northwest thing wasn't that bad, I guess. People were raising a lot of stink about the CNN thing, but apparently it doesn't seem to have been much of...
That I'll hold judgment on until the episode actually airs.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were talking like she was kind of... Lisa Ling, the reporter who was... it's her show. She was apparently handling it well, handling interviews with people pretty well. So maybe it won't be as bad. I still fault the con for springing that on the attendees. Like, no advance warning. Like, I found out, like, the Monday before the con, and other people who had already registered found out when they picked up their badges and had to sign the release or not. And the con tweeted that they had been in negotiations with the show for months. So you can't say that they just had a lack of knowledge about it coming up. But other than that, and I never doubted this, people on the ground seem to have had a good time, which is often the case with conventions. Like, even when you see a con do something really kind of fucked up, like a lot of people were criticizing Fur Fright's choice of themes and badge levels. We talked about that on the show, you know, having to register as an orderly or a
electroshock technician or patient.
Or a lobotomist, that's what it was. But, you know, the people that actually went to Furpocalypse, that actually went, you know, yeah, they enjoyed it. The people there at Anthro Northwest, they enjoyed it. I wonder how Anthro Northeast feels about that. Because, like, Anthro Northeast has been around for a couple of years now.
Well, see, now there's going to be Anthro Southwest, Anthro Southeast. Then you start getting real granular, and it's Anthro East Northeast.
Actually, there is... I don't remember if it's called Anthro Southeast, but there is a something Southeast con on the table.
I know there's, like, Tar Heel.
Tar Heel is
in South Carolina, I think.
Uh-huh. And the one, the Furry Southeast or Anthro Southeast, is going to be in Tennessee to replace FanCon because FanCon had to move to Alabama. So they're down in Birmingham. So I don't know if it's the same group or whether it's a separate group, but they're basically taking the place of FanCon in, like, Nashville. I'm not sure if it's exactly in Nashville, but it's in Tennessee. I think it might be Nashville.
Yeah, Birmingham's a bit of a drive from Nashville.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, for those heavily regional cons, you know, they're probably getting the same amount of attendees. They're just pulling them from Alabama instead of from Tennessee.
Yeah, because the Alabama and Mississippi still don't really have con. I mean, Mississippi technically has MFM, because it's technically across the border. I mean, it's in Mississippi, technically.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you were going to MFM when it was in Tennessee, you're probably still going to it when it's in Mississippi, because it's only like 30 minutes away from where it used to be.
It's like straight down the road from the airport there.
Pretty much, yeah. It's not far. So yeah, I don't think they didn't have a negative impact to their attendance by moving to Mississippi. Yeah.
And our Rocket City is dead.
So. Well, it's been dead for a long time.
Yeah.
Rocky Mountain's dead. Oh, that's the other... Holy shit. So, Denver, the replacement for Rocky Mountain FurCon, which is going to be a furry convention in Denver in 2018, they announced their theme, and it's rebuilding. Yes. And it's these furries looking at this wilderness and devastation in their artwork, and they're like, we're gonna rebuild from the ruins of the community or something like that. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, I retweeted it. I was like, so what's it called when your con theme is a subtweet? Like, just damn, you know? Like,
yeah.
Really zero chill about, hey, RMFC burned our local community to the ground, but we're going to rebuild it. I was like, I wish those guys success. And, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yep. I mean, I had fun the one time I went to Rocky Mountain. Also, I was high as shit the entire time, but I had fun. You want the books? Bend over incredibly slowly. Okay, here's your book.
Yeah. My hand's over here. Yeah. Like, what? Were you really that? I don't remember that part.
No.
The only part I remember is you looking at the fursuit parade with this absolutely fucking amazed expression on your face.
Yeah. Well, I was trying really, really hard to not be high in the, like, I'm still trying to do my job and get people their books, but I was just really slow about it. So.
You were doing the what weed, officer?
Yeah, except it's totally legal there, so.
Buy a book. Don't look in the trunk.
So, hey, maybe it'll be cool, and I'll go and spend the entire con legally high. That was fun.
And then the episode we do after that will be legally high.
Yep. Oh, God, there was something else convention-wise that I was gonna bring up that escaped my head as I was talking.
Furry or otherwise?
Oh, right. I remember now. It was... So, there's a My Little Pony convention that's trying to start up in Vegas, called High Roller Pony Con.
And that's right.
Their hotel got bought out, and like what happened, I think it was YumaCon, when Pepper was going to be a guest there, the hotel was like, actually, no, you're not going to have your convention here. Get out. So...
And you know, I'm kind of on the side of the con in this case, because the... stated reasons that the convention gave for having to find a new hotel was they said we weren't conservative enough. And this doesn't mean politically. This means we think you're a bunch of weirdos. But then you see their advertising and they're like,
Thirsty Thursdays, come to our wall of daiquiris and our women in bikinis will totally serve you one in this massive 3-foot tall thing. Only $50, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Very sexualized. Very not really what I'd call a conservative environment. And I'm like, they said something like it would jeopardize our position with the Nevada Gaming Commission. And I'm like, if a bunch of people wearing horsetails and pony ears is not going to fucking like ruin your hotel. Come
maybe
on.
Maybe I could see that they're concerned that they'll have underage people maybe end up on the gaming floor and fucking with the gaming machines and playing them, which is illegal. Like, you can't gamble if you're not 18, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know if BLFC is an 18 and only over only convention, but I haven't heard of this issue coming up for BLFC.
I totally think they're full of shit. Like, I think that they're
not
hotel,
BLFC.
No, the hotel that booted High Roller is probably full of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But they ended up getting a landing elsewhere, and it's closer to the strip, and they're now near the monorail, and can get around the strip.
Like, a Rainbow Dash fursuiter is not going to be the weirdest thing you see in Vegas on a weekend. It's
yeah, and
such a ridiculous idea to think that a My Little Pony Con is just that strange.
Yeah. I mean, consider that they've got the fucking various porn expos and whatnot. It was like, God, I remember there was an article where it was like some electronic show and this on the same weekend as an adult entertainment expo.
Uh-huh.
And they were like in adjacent sections or adjacent buildings almost. So you could be like, oh yeah, come on, wander on by and check out the new advances in porn technology right after you look at the new advances in television technology. These things are totally intermarried.
Yeah, they kind of are.
They are.
I mean, you know, buy this 3D LTE TV or LG TV and, you know, and then watch this do 3D porn on it.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, honestly.
You can stick your head right inside her ass.
I honestly think that a failure in the 3D market, in addition to being gimmicky and some people can't see
it. Can you imagine what a squirting shot would look like in 3D? Male or female.
Oh, man.
Like, that fluid is coming right at you? That would be incredible.
Yeah.
I might want to buy a 3D. if the porn industry is not embracing 3D filming technology, they should be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's apparently some, like, Oculus-style 3D. Like, it's filmed in 360, so you can look around and see the fucking. You're in the middle of the fucking! Yeah!
Oh, nice.
But, like, the 3D bit apparently never got picked up, I guess, because, you know, the reason we have VHS, or had VHS, was because Sony didn't want porn on Betamax, so they were like, alright, well, VHS it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
see how well that worked out for Betamax.
Yep. And Sony in a lot of ways, too. It's actually, one thing I'm really hoping is that if there's gonna be any Black Friday deals on the Vive, the HTC Vive headsets, because, like, I would really like to get one, and they're like, oh, but you can get an Oculus Rift, and I'm like, well, fuck you, Oculus is owned by Facebook, fuck that noise.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that.
Yeah, and then I'll be watching my Facebook feed, and I'll be like, you know, Savrin Drake liked 69ing brown eye lesbians on his Oculus or whatever. Yeah, it's
like, I just got a high score in
coming. Yeah. Well, we already know that.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, you know, 21 times a month to help stave off prostate cancer. That's one cancer I don't have to worry about.
Yeah, I just saw that article and I'm like, holy shit, man.
You know, it was so funny because it was Dust that posted it and he was like, on it, fam.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. Just so you know, jacking off, if you jack off at least 3 weeks out of the 4 a month, you're good to go.
You take a rest that last week to let the chafing heal.
Yeah. Well,
that is one thing that I'm a little jealous about, having watched more porn. I'm a little jealous of uncut guys, so how easily you can jerk off and not have to worry about lube.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a naturally slick penis.
Well, I'm lucky in that, like, hey, let's forget it. Really, NSFW now, you know?
Sure.
You know, that my cut is real minimal, so.
Oh, okay.
I got plenty of skin there to work with. It's nice.
Plenty of play to work with.
Yeah.
I used to always jerk off dry. Like, I grew up jerking off dry because it's like, I don't know how. People always make all these jokes about, oh, where's lotion, all the hand lotion going and stuff like that. And it's like, I guess I was jerking on the down low enough as a teenager. I didn't have to go through bottles of hand lotion and baby oil.
So it is funny I was digging through my con closet, right? And I found a box of tissues that had been in, like, the green room at some point, and one of my guests just autographed it for lulz. So now I've got an autographed box of tissues sitting next to my iMac. And I'm like...
I can guess who the guest was,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it was just like, oh, yeah, that's totally... It's just one of those so stereotypical things. Like, oh, there's a box of tissues next to the computer. And I'm like, don't need those. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Could you sign my cum rag?
Oh, God. Sign my Dakimakura. No, not there. Oh, well, okay.
Oh, that's going to get wiped off really quick.
It's like, oh, you signed her tits. Oh, man.
I hug those.
God.
I can't wait to see the further advances in Daki technology, where maybe they'll start having little mini pillows where the boobs are or something.
Oh, God. Those do exist, and there's also advanced ones that you can, like, fuck, apparently. Mm. Japan is, like, way ahead of us in terms of Dakimakura technology.
Like, I guess they'd have to have a specially made pillow that had some sort of space in it.
Yeah,
you could put your dick through the docky, or maybe put a fleshlight
inside. I don't even know, man. I know they exist.
But... I'm just, like, thinking out loud here. I don't actually fuck dockies, but I'm like... How could you do that? That'd be easy enough to do. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
It would just involve a lot more washing.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, whatever works for you.
Sure.
I suppose, but they totally... Like, well, I thought you were saying when they have the little pillows on, like, the mini dockies. There was somebody at Nightmare Nights that actually was... There were some Dakimakuras for sale. None of them super lewd because, you know, we do have our rules.
Right, yeah.
But there was this... They had the micro, like... mini ones that are like maybe the size of this cup.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like there's these really tiny ones that are like that tall.
Oh, like
yeah,
the hand size. No,
yeah.
These are like you give your plush a Dakimakura.
Oh, okay.
And so it was funny because
this is basically like a keychain.
Oh, yeah. No, this was like if you want to give your plush a Dakimakura, you could totally do that for whatever reason. It seemed really bizarre.
So you have this plush of your waifu, and she can cuddle a plush of herself.
Yes, on a pillow.
Or maybe she has a waifu or husbando that's a different character.
Yeah. Oh, shit. So, like, you have Rarity, a plush of Rarity, but she has a little docky of Applejack.
Right,
There we go. Yeah, that... You could really go down a few layers there.
So this is one of the situations where you're like, huh, why is this? And then you see the name of the dealership and you're like, oh, that's why. I'm looking at the Nightmare Nights vendor hall and I'm looking at all these prints and I'm like, these are all Rarity and Applejack. Why is this person so obsessed with this one pairing at their table? Then I go over and I don't remember if it was Rara Jack Daly, but it was basically
it was
like
White Diamonds. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The artist name is White Diamonds.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's their thing. That's their Tumblr. It's this whole ship. I'm like, okay, that makes some flashback reminded me. The time I was at MegaCon in Orlando. Not Megaplex. This is different. MegaCon. It's a big old comic con.
Yeah.
And I'm walking down the aisles and I see these photographs of sci-fi characters. And I'm looking and I'm like, Chekhov, Bester, Chekhov, Bester. It's like, wait a minute. These are all pictures of Walter Koenig. And then I look up and there's Walter Koenig.
Man, like, why do you only have this one dude? And he's like, I don't know.
But what happened was he'd registered late or something, I'm not sure, but he didn't have a table in the autograph area. He had a table in like the regular vendor area. So I was honestly surprised to see him. I looked up, I was like, and then this was back in the day when you could just go, hey, can I get a picture with you? And, you know, you'd have someone take a picture with you and, like, didn't cost anything extra. And I thanked him and I bought an autograph and I left. And it was really kind of cool. And it's like, and nowadays that's like a $200 experience, you know?
Yeah. Huh.
What's up?
This is weird. So Kotaku, for whatever reason, posted an article that I just saw Zia posted it. It was the Dogs of War, and it's this guy's art who did dog tars. So, like, there's this dog tar bulldog, and a Doberman in armor, and a Chihuahua.
Oh, okay.
And various other things. It's like, this is weird.
I mean, not my thing, but it seems like very accomplished art from brief glance.
Yeah. Oh, it's super well drawn. It's just like, tars, everywhere tars. Shiva would like it, but she's not here. So she can't see it ever. Ah! So, have you seen any of 12 Monkeys, by the way?
I've seen the first season and a half, and then I just kind of stopped watching it. I kind of need to go back.
Okay, because I'm just like, man, I don't like this universe right now. I'm not enjoying this crapsack world. So, This is one of the things that I don't really like in dystopian, or not dystopian, but like post-apocalyptic bullshit. The idea that humanity will go immediately to just fucking everybody over, murder, and just...
Like in The Walking Dead, when you have groups of non-zombie people who have turned to cannibalism because apparently food is so scarce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or in, you know, Fallout, you've got the raiders and bullshit, and then you've... And in this, it's like you've got all... A huge, vast chunk of humanity dies, and so immediately they turn on each other. Mm-hmm. The remaining survivors turn on each other for whatever reason, despite there being...
Very few people left.
Yeah, and it just... I find it very distasteful, because, I mean, we see in events... I mean, we've seen this in our own society. Like, you know, look at, like, Puerto Rico, or we look at Haiti, or we look at, hell, even here in, like, Houston, where you have basically people coming together to help each other. Like, it just seems...
I wouldn't say Puerto Rico is a good example of that, though. Well, I mean...
of the people working together, not the government. The government fucked up real hard there.
Yeah.
But the people of Puerto Rico have largely, from what I've seen, worked all right together.
Right.
And they're not looting and pillaging and shooting each other and murdering each other because they're not part of the same tribe. It just... I don't enjoy fiction like this because it has such a negative-ass view of humanity. And don't get me wrong, humanity can be fucking bad. But it just seems like it's this libertarian gun fantasy where, like, I'm going to be the sole survivor and kill whoever stands against me so that I can be the... wealthiest dead motherfucker off by himself in the wilderness and not trying to rebuild civilization. I don't know. I don't like that fiction at all.
Yeah.
I find the genre... If you like it, cool, but it's not something I enjoy. And it's just, like, okay, the villain here... And we're only, like, 4 or 5 episodes in, too, where I'm just getting bored of it.
Mm.
Where the villain is just like, oh, survival of the fittest, I'm the manliest man, and... You know, just fucking murdering people after he's taken all their shit for the lulz. It's like, what the fuck? I don't know. I just... We're watching that, and I'm finding it just really distasteful. I don't enjoy that. I mean, the Orville's really fun. I don't know if we talked about that.
We haven't. Are you caught up on it?
Not yet. We're midway season one.
Well, yeah, I mean, the show is midway season one right now. They're only on episode 7. That's all that it's aired.
Oh, well then we're like at episode 5?
Okay, so you're almost caught up. Yeah.
Yeah.
not that it doesn't have, like, a continuing narrative like Discovery does. It's pretty much episodic. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I think it's a really great Star Trek fanfic.
It's a fun mix of some serious Trek-type issues and adventures, but then you've also got, like, the humor in it, you know, and something happens and people will be like, oh, that's fucked up. Have you seen the one where they try to teach the robot guy practical jokes?
No, not yet.
Oh, my... No, you got to have.
The last episode I've seen was the colony ship one with Liam Neeson as, like, the actual... Like,
oh, yeah.
Dural guy.
Right.
So...
I was sure that this was episode 3 or 4 they did this, where they're like... They've done a practical joke on a robot guy where they've put, like, little flowers on his head or something.
No.
And since he doesn't have any touch-related sensors on his head, he couldn't feel it. So... And it's the... At the nap... John. Is like, and now you've got to get me back... And you've got to make it, you've got to, like, up the ante. But you can't tell me when you're doing it. And it's like, I see, I will attempt this human practical joke thing or something like that. And and what he actually does is a bit further than the human characters were expecting it to go. He's like, "What? Why don't you find this funny? I did exactly what you told me to do." And it's to great humor effect.
Like, I'm enjoying it, but I'm also getting a lot of, like, Next Generation vibe from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I may have said this last week, I don't remember, but it's very much Next Generation. They're out there doing space shit doing adventures. It's not like, oh, we're trapped in the Delta Quadrant, or I'm on a space station. No, it's we're a crew of dudes dicking around the galaxy.
Right.
And in an established universe that has, you know, lots of different races and whatnot and all that fun stuff. Because, like, there's the intro episode, there's the space zoo episode, there's the really awkward, our baby was born a girl, but we're going to... That one was weird.
Oh, see, that was... Ajax and I were talking about that. We were really impressed by that one, because we were like... Because it's very pertinent to current issues, right? With gender reassignment. That was one where we watched, we were like, I can't believe they went there. Wow. Like, and actually trying to say something about it.
It was a bit odd, though. It was just like,
It was a lot heavier a topic than I was expecting for a comedy show.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, it wraps up, and they're like, well, that's how it ended.
Yeah, but I kind of like that in a way that... Like, things with storytelling. Like, there's an idea, like, in, like, Western storytelling that you always need a happy ending.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, and this goes back to movies that I talked about, like, years ago, where, like the Butterfly Effect, the original ending was...
Super dark.
Was super dark. Now, the ending's sort of bittersweet, but the original ending was super dark.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, this tested horrible with audiences. You have to change the ending. Now, the original cut is on the DVD if you want to watch it. But so I was really, with the Orville, I was like, oh, you know, things didn't work out like the way we as an audience probably hoped that it would.
Yeah, or like that one part in the tail end of season 2 of The Expanse, where the refugees from the one moon are on a ship and they separate out the Belters and the Earthers and Martians.
Yeah.
And it went exactly how I expected it to go, given the nature of the show and its disregard for individual life.
Right, yeah.
It was just like, you know, they're doing this scene for shock, but you've watched enough of the show and you're like, I know how this is gonna go.
And it's...
Totally fucking does.
That's really something to, like... And that's another thing where, like, you're like, disbelief is a little broken to the point where you're sort of like, you know, they grew up in different circumstances. They're slightly... Belters are slightly different from Earthlings or Martians. But they're still human beings.
Yeah.
And you just had that much disregard for, like... Well, we've kind of blown that they die. But basically, they space, like, 30 fucking people.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And it's not even, like, a major plot point. It's just, yo, this bad shit just happened to this character. And it kind of traumatizes him a little.
Yeah.
But he doesn't dwell on it either. Because he's kind of like, I'm a Belter and this bad shit happens all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Like, the universe of The Expanse is really bad for, like, 80-90% of the population. Just saying.
Yeah.
And so, I think it's one of those things where you have the expectations of bad shit has happened a lot in The Expanse.
Yeah.
But when you're early in on a show that's a comedy that's also, like, a... space, the sci-fi story,
you don't know.
It's like, are you expecting it to have, like, the ending people would want? Mm-hmm. Or is it gonna be, like, this is how it is, this is how it's always gonna be?
Yeah.
You know, and so that was, I think that's kind of why I was a little sort of like, at the ending of that episode of the Orville, versus when that incident occurred in
The Expanse,
it was completely expected.
Because you're used to the dark and the dreary and the fuck these people kind of attitude. In The Expanse, in Orville, it's what, episode 3?
Yeah.
I think that happens. And you're just kind of like, wow, this fun comedy show just suddenly took a pretty dark turn.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that's just one of those things where we have a different expectation from the types of shows we're watching.
Right, yeah.
Where, like,
I could totally see your point, though,
so
definitely.
Consider, all right, well, also, like, say, not Zoo, because we kind of gave up on that one, but watching 12 Monkeys, mm-hmm. like, bad shit happens, and then you realize what a crap sack world it is, and it's really establishes this is the tone of the show real mm-hmm. early on.
Yeah.
And then, like, Expanse. Tone of the show is established really early on when the Kent gets blown the fuck up.
Right, yeah. Like watching episode one of The Expanse, I'm sort of like, I'm approaching it, I guess, like it's a Star Trek show. I'm like, okay, this is the Kent. This is the big ship. The main characters are on it. This is going to be the ship that we follow, right? And episode one, they're like, it's just fucking gone. In a way, it's sort of like Discovery. Where, like, the first two episodes, you're on the USS Shenzhou, and you're like, and I knew this going into Discovery that they weren't going to be on this ship, but like they establish, like the first couple of episodes feel very Star Trek, in like the 90s era Star Trek. You have this likable captain, you have this good interaction amongst the bridge crew, you have this ship that's like the captain describes as, you know, she's old, but she still gets us where we're going, so the ship kind of has a personality. And then by episode two, that ship is fucked. It's a wreck. She's actually left floating in space as unsalvageable. And the USS Discovery, the namesake ship of the show, doesn't appear until episode three.
Oh.
Which is a really interesting take on, like, it's very different from prior Star Trek.
That's like how at the start of New Trek, the movies, the first one, like, it opens up on the Kelvin.
Yes.
And then the Enterprise itself doesn't show up until, like, later in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, that movie starts with, like, Kirk's dad sacrificing himself and blowing up the Kelvin so that everyone else can
escape. Yeah.
Yeah. I still really enjoy that movie, by the way.
No, I like it, man.
Like, yeah, like, a lot of people are like, see, people seem really split on the Star Trek feature films right now, these latest three. I mean, as a longtime Trek fan, I really enjoy them. And it feels like some people that are, like, super, super purists aren't enjoying them as much.
Yeah.
But the films are not really made for the super purists.
They're made to get new fans.
Right. They're made to get new fans, and they also have to be made to appeal to the broadest possible audience. And I think, have you seen the third one, Beyond,
yet? Yeah, we watched it here.
That's right. You and I watched it together. I really enjoyed Star Trek Beyond, and I think part of it is like, so Star Trek, it's all the setup, introducing the characters, introducing the change in the timeline. You've got old Spock interacting with the new cast and stuff like that. And then Into Darkness is an attempt to remake Star Trek II. And while I enjoy watching Into Darkness as like a popcorn film, I have no illusions of it living up to Star Trek II.
Yeah.
And how awesome the original interaction with Khan is. But Star Trek Beyond, you're not doing the intro, you're not doing an attempted pseudo-remake. It's like the first movie where it's like the cast is established, they're on their adventures, they're in the middle of their five-year mission, you know, and they're doing their thing. And Beyond really feels like this cast is coming into their own.
Yeah.
You know?
And what was good about Beyond is that a lot of it was Trek on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got to, like, base deploy. Like, in the first one, there was lots of space bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, there was, again, lots of space nonsense mm-hmm. with the going for the juggernaut and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the third movie is a lot of they're on the planet, the crashed planet. They're all crashed down on the planet, and the mystery around that. And then, like, at the very end, there's more space stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it is Trek on the ground adventure, which I liked a lot.
Yeah. And that movie came out the year of the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
And, like, there's all these callbacks to other Treks. and little connections and stuff. And I personally really enjoyed that. I felt it was a fitting anniversary movie, you know.
I mean, it's one of those things where you can't be too purist in your enjoyment of stuff, or you can't enjoy new stuff. I mean, this goes for Star Wars, this goes for Doctor Who, this goes for Trek.
Oh, it absolutely... maybe me being a Doctor Who fan has sort of numbed me to continuity issues, because there are, like, I think it's up to 3 explanations for why the dinosaurs went extinct. Like, 3 different times they've been like, oh, hey, this thing happened way back in time, this is what caused the dinosaurs to go extinct.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, which one do you believe? It's not like one's the TV show and one's a novel. We're talking about the TV, it's like the Bible. The TV show is contradicting itself. For me, I'm just like, you know what? It's a time travel show. Sometimes shit changes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so the explanation was this in a 4th Doctor episode, and it's something different in a 5th Doctor episode, which happened a couple hundred years after, as far as the character is concerned.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
And again, and like with Star Wars, like they're making changes here and there, but it's still largely, it's Star Wars. And it's interesting because you have the new canon versus old canon stuff, and they're folding in the stuff they like from the old canon into the new.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now they're integrating stuff from, like, the cartoons, like Clone Wars and
Rebels
specifically, yeah, into the greater canon.
Right.
Apparently, Hera Syndulla, the Twi'lek pilot gal, she was name-checked in Rogue One as General Syndulla, and the ship, the Ghost, from
that's
Rebels
right.
was
yeah,
also
we mentioned
in there.
That, yeah.
Like, apparently, like, she's one of the characters in Forces of Destiny or whatever. It's the girl's toy line that features Leia and Hera and all these other Jyn Erso. They also have Rey. They have two different Leias. You have
Princess Leia and General. Nice.
Where she's got her white dress with the buns, but then also there's her indoor outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I've got a fucking gun.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's interesting, too.
I really like that, because, like, Leia in Star Wars with the white robe and the buns is a really iconic image.
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone knows that character. And I love that she's grown into, like, this badass rebel general type.
Yeah.
And, like, even in the original trilogy of 4, 5, and 6, she's a general.
Yeah, she goes like, I'm a princess, and I'm this sort of pseudo-damsel in distress, but then she gets to Yavin and is like, alright, let's kill these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And then in Hoth, she's, yo, let's kill these motherfuckers and get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's on the ground in Endor. It's cool that they're expanding and folding in stuff.
Yeah.
And also, I just think it's cool that they're doing, like, the Forces of Destiny, and they're making Star Wars stuff for girls now.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Star Wars is for everybody. But they actually have stuff at Target, which is like, hey, this is an illustration done, I think, by Amy Meberson of Leia looking badass, or Rey looking badass on a little girl t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the Starhawk logo in, like, glitter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, sweet.
Cool.
That's cool, you know?
Speaking of which, Last Jedi is, like, a couple weeks.
Oh, fuck, I know.
Is it December 8th, right? It's early in the month, I think.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm totally gonna go see that shit. Oh my god.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna brave opening night for it, because that's going to be absolutely insane. But I definitely do want to see it, though. And there was an interesting conversation on Twitter today. The Audible account, of all places, was tweeting out these theories about what's going on in The Last Jedi. And Kevin Smith was like, quote, retweeting and replying to it, talking about how the trailer, Luke is like, the Jedi have to end.
Yeah.
And it's called The Last Jedi. And like, apparently there's this thing from the expanded universe where there's this order that doesn't believe in the light and the dark. They believe in like it all, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
I don't know all the details. You may more know about it.
Well, it's one of those things that was sort of touched on, that, you know, Sith and Jedi are like, okay, we're too two factions of Force users, but there's a way fucking bigger universe out there of people that can touch the Force in various ways. I mean, like the Night Sisters of Dathomir, they identify as being pretty dark side, but they're their own fucking thing. Mm-hmm. And then there was something.
They're the people from Darth Maul's planet.
Don't know. I'm not sure, but the Night Sisters of Dathomir were an old extended universe thing.
Oh, okay.
And
see, in Clone Wars, they go to the planet that Maul comes from.
Yeah.
And like all the males are like these like warrior types and everything like that. And then there's all these women. They're like the people in the town are like, oh, they're the witches of whatever, and they basically will go to the town and they'll basically draft a male, and then they will teach him how to use the Force and how to be a badass and do all this like mystic shit and basically create a Sith warrior. And
yeah.
And that's where Maul came from. And in the show, because Maul's supposed to be dead at that point, they go and they do the same thing to his brother.
Yeah.
And his brother is supposed to go out and be Count Dooku's new apprentice, which of course Sidious doesn't like because there's only supposed to be two.
Yeah.
But Dooku is continually getting new apprentices. That's who Ventress Savage, yeah, is one of Dooku's apprentices.
Yeah, he keeps burning through them.
Yeah, yeah, because fucking Sidious is like, nope.
Murdered.
Yeah.
I think what they're gonna do, and it's been confirmed, the last Jedi is Luke. He is the last Jedi. What Rey will be, what...
Has that been confirmed?
Yeah, I think it was stated by... I know I read it somewhere that basically because Luke is the last Jedi.
The accidental spoiler that I saw was that they showed the image of the poster in another language.
Uh-huh.
And it was like something Los Jedi. It was like in that language it was implied to be plural.
Yeah.
Because Jedi can be a singular or a plural. It doesn't have another form.
Mm-hmm.
So the English language, it could be either way, but in this other language, it was the last Jedi, plural, would be Rey and Luke.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this other information is, like, more recent.
The trailers are all, like,
yeah,
Luke's like, holy shit, I've seen this power before, I wasn't scared then, but fuck, you know? And so...
Yeah, like, it looks like Rey is, like, as powerful and natural Force user as Anakin was when he was young.
Yeah.
And, like, Luke is afraid of... Although Luke could be referring to Kylo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Kylo fucks shit up real well.
Yeah.
It'll be real interesting to see how this changes the dynamic, because in the expanded universe, there's been planets that are like, yo, these people are just naturally Force sensitive, and they don't adhere. They're not light side, dark side. This is just they have these abilities.
Yeah.
And they occasionally get snatched up by the Jedi, and there was actually, I listened to the Star Wars New Canon Book Club, which is a podcast that is exactly what it says on the tin.
Right, yeah.
And they were discussing Clone Wars Season 6 and how there was an episode with Jar Jar and Mace Windu as the characters, and they're on this planet of Force-sensitive people that really hate the Jedi, because they're like, yo, you keep coming and kidnapping our kids, fuck you.
Right.
It's like, we're Force-sensitive, that's just how we are.
Yeah.
And the Jedi are coming in and being like, no, your kid needs to come with us. And they're like, nah, fuck off.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because, like, it expands the way that the Force is perceived.
Because, and that makes sense, because, I mean, like Yoda said, you know, the Force flows through every living thing and binds us all. So, like, why would it only be these handful of light or dark people that can actually use the Force? I bet everybody in that universe, if they put enough practice into it, they could at least, like, move a coin across a table and then... Because everyone has that little bit of Force.
Yeah.
But then there's presence, people that have naturally have more Force sensitivity.
Then there's, in the show, in Rebels, I think there's a mention of, like, there's the living Force and then, like, the galactic Force.
What?
Yeah, like, there's a lot of different layers to the Force as a construct in the Star Wars universe mm-hmm. that has been explored in canon media. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with...
And if you pay enough, you meet Xenu.
Yeah, well, you never know. It'll be really interesting. I'm looking forward to it. And then, of course, you've got the people like, I swear to God, I better not see Luke Skywalker die on screen, motherfucker.
Yeah, no, I would... Yeah, I mean, we've already been through one. I think it would actually just be overkill if they're just like, we're going to kill off every original trilogy character.
Yeah, or they're just like, we're going to kill two Skywalkers, one film.
Right. And I mean, and they're already sort of in a bind with Leia because... Well, she's in 8, and she had not shot any material for 9, so it's like, I don't know what they're going to do with the character. They're not going to recast her.
Yeah, they heavily imply that she's going to get killed in the trailer.
Yeah, she'll have to be killed off-screen in Last Jedi, I guess, and that'll really suck.
Yeah.
But... I don't see anything else they can really do when they already know they have another movie coming out afterwards.
Yeah, they've got the third part of the third trilogy, but Carrie Fisher is not going to be in this for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, the CG they did in Rogue One, it's all right, but they can't make a CG...
Yeah.
She can't be a main character.
They did her, they did...
Tarkin.
Marf Tarkin. Grand Moff Tarkin. And like,
Marf Tarkin.
And Marf Tarkin. Yeah, that's the furry versions. Grand Marf Tarkin.
Tarkin.
Oh, shit. Is that what the Tar people are called? Tarkin?
There we go, yeah.
Let's Grand see. Marf the Tar Tarkin. Other kids. Oh, God damn it.
Such furries.
Grand Murph Tarkin. And it worked. He was only in a few scenes, and Leia was only in that very last scene. It works in small doses, but I don't think you can do a full movie on it. You could do a full CG cartoon like Rebels.
Yeah, and like having CG robots or aliens, but when you're trying to do a recognizable human, the Uncanny Valley is a big deal.
Yeah. I wasn't... Like, when I... It had been so many years since I'd seen the original Star Wars that when Tarkin shows up, I was looking at him and I was like, did they get an actor that looks a lot like Peter Cushing? Or is that CG? And, you know, like, it might have passed muster if you weren't, like, super familiar with the original actor, but... It did have, like, every time he was on screen, I was looking at his face, trying to be like, no, that's CG. It's really good CG, but that's CG. I guess that kind of took me out of the movie a little bit, you know? It is a really cool way to see people who are either deceased or way older than their characters, like in Tron. They did it with Bruce Boxleitner. You could do it with Tron because Tron is a computer-generated character anyway.
Everybody's
supposed to look a little bit unworldly, and you've got all the lights and shadows and neon and shit anyway, but I don't know. I wouldn't want them to do a whole Star Wars Episode 9 with the CGI General Leia.
Yeah,
that's not going to work.
Pretty bad.
And the thing that sucks, and I mentioned this... when we went out to see Guardians of the Galaxy... No, not Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Fuck. What was the last MCU movie?
Well, the last one was Thor.
Thor, yeah. I mentioned this to the group I was with when we went to see Thor Ragnarok, that I had read that the original idea for the trilogy was that, I mean, they want to give the original trilogy characters their due, but they also... are introducing all these new characters and telling their story. So, in Star Wars 7, Han Solo gets a larger part than the other original trilogy characters, and that ends his story. In Star Wars 8, Luke is going to have a larger role. And the concept was Star Wars 9, Leia was going to have the larger role of the remaining original
They're like,
cast.
It's mine, and then, oh,
and,
shit.
And now, and it sucks that, like, you're like, that means, I mean, she may or may not have that much to do in 8. I don't know. I think she'll have more than in 7, but we'll see, I guess. So, this has been Movie Cast with Savern and Fuzz.
And you know what? You didn't even say the cursed line. This will be a short episode, because we're coming up on, like, an hour 40.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's 10 o'clock. We should probably wrap this up.
Yeah,
let's go. If you would like to nerd out with us, you can always email us at notcast@foxduffers.com. You can contact us on Tumblr. If you go to notcast.com, it takes you there. And, yeah, you can find me on Twitter with my alternating fiery leftist takes and pictures of my dog, at Saverin Drake.
You can follow me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf with my leftist takes and talking about books, basically.
Oh, yeah. You know the kind of people we are.
Yeah.
I would hope so at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're Notcast everywhere, and you can find us on Patreon at Notcast if you want to hear more. If you want to donate, great. If not, well, that's okay, too. Every little bit helps. On that note, good night.
And big balls.